Your home for sports on the radio. We are 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Tannen, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, to go, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
Yellow. Welcome to Sports Talk. Tuesday edition, by the way. Thanks for checking in. Making the rounds in the world of sports as 4 o'clock hits as a rule this time of year. You had a whole bunch of hoops, NBA, collage. Getting ready for... Well, I guess I'm not technically preparing for the weekend. For the first time, we did have pitchers and catchers report to various locales around the Grapefruit and Cactus Leagues, which is always nice to hear. Ron Renicki is the new manager of the Boston Red Sox. Forbes came out with their... average value of NBA franchises, a figure that has risen about 600% in the past decade. I remember we were joking when Steve Ballmer bought the Clippers from that sleaze Donald Sterling, and it was like, dude, you paid $2 billion for the Clippers. The Clippers. Should be able to buy the Clippers with the change you find in your couch. And to just prove how, what do they say, 60% of wealth in this country is inherited? Boy, when you read that, you're like, oh, James Dolan. The Knicks are the most valuable franchise in the NBA. Of course, when you consider where they're located in the number one market, 33rd and 8th, kind of prime real estate. $4.6 billion. That moron has an asset worth $4.6 billion. They should have a raffle. Just like 10 people, just not hurt him, just smack him. Just 10 Knick fans. He's got to stand there, hands tied behind his back, and just walk by him, and you could backhand him. Just one slap. Whack. Bang. Crack.
I think just like pushing him into a pool with his phone in his pocket, or he's holding a laptop or something. Or
I really hate violence, but God, he's a jag.
That's why I resort to, like, you get knocked off a pier. You fall into a pool, your wallet's going to get wet, you got to replace your phone. Because he's a billionaire, he's going to have a couple even more expensive things that definitely can't go into the water. Like, for some reason, he's going to be holding a painting and his third favorite guitar or something, and it's going to get tarnished and ruined because he fell into this pool. But it doesn't hurt him. Like, he's still worth billions of dollars. If he wants to get the guitar back, he can just sell the team and he'll be able to buy as many guitars as he wants.
Of all the idiotic things I've said, and for those of you who are listeners, you're like, well, that's a big list. So, a couple buddies I used to hang out with, and one of our favorite things was Sunday Night Football. When it was still kind of new, we just thought, this is really cool. You could watch football all Sunday, and then there's another game. So this is 91, 92. And so I'm watching the Jets, and naturally I'm aggravated. And it was the offensive coordinator. It wasn't the Gilbride game where Buddy Ryan went after him. And I said something along the lines, it's like, I prefaced it was like, it's football. I'm not a violent person. I would just like to run up to him and kick him. And they were like, that's perfect. I mean, what are they going to do? Charge you with assault? I mean, he's supposed to be a big, bad football tough guy. And you have, you know, somebody like me. I just, hey, you, offensive coordinator, just like kick him in the shins and run. That's all. I don't ask for much. James Dolan having an asset bordering on $5 billion because he came out of the right womb and has literally done nothing right. That's a kickable and a smackable offense.
So the logical thing that everybody's saying on Twitter is, well, it's about time that he sells the Knicks. Like, they're this bad and they're the most valuable franchise in the sport. Like, dude, you should kind of cash in now. But the thing is, like, if he actually puts some value in and, like, people start showing up to Knick games because they feel like they're going to enjoy the product that is put out on the court before them, and then they start to get good, like, can their value's only going to go up. And the problem is also
but
with
is
that.
It?
But the problem is he's been trying for so long to make the product better, and it gets worse, and he's seeing their value go up. So he's really kind of disincentivized. That's the word, to not make the team better, because he's been trying to make them better and they're making him more money.
This is him trying. The problem with the Knicks franchise is, all right, late 70s, early 80s, when the league was in trouble because there were just issues. There was coke and there was bad reputation.
No,
it was pre-Magic and Michael and Bird. But it's still a symbol. For example, there are many financial houses and major businesses and advertising agencies that still buy tickets to the Knicks games because, especially, somebody's in from out of town, you go to the Garden. It's very difficult to explain. And having been to Staples Center, it's just different. I have not seen the new facility where the Warriors play, as far as, you know, you could be working in the city and make it to the Garden in no time. I mean, even from downtown, you could take the E train or something and just get out and, you know, right under Penn Station and you're there. There's just something magical about working in a city and then being able to go to a game like that without getting in your car, dealing with parking, just like, oh, we're here. And, you know, that's how you, it's a very whiny diny thing to have. It just happens to be they're the Knicks. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Steven. Steven, good afternoon. How are things in the Sunshine State?
Beautiful. Today was 81 degrees in Cape Coral, Florida. I want to say go Ducks forever. The Oregon Ducks did an awesome job winning their championship in hockey.
Oh yeah, the club team, and congratulations! I got appreciate the call, Stephen. Texts and tweets from some of you, and it's like congratulations, but and it's not to be dismissive of an accomplishment. But it's a club team, and it's very hard when you do a show like this. And I've talked about this before with people who ask about high school coverage. And it's like, high school coverage is not for local talk radio. It's to if you call games or broadcast games. And we've gone through this, and so many of you over the years, why don't you cover Sheldon fill in the blank more? And I'm like, so your son's on the team? Well, yeah. And it's like, I'm like, so you've been listening to the show regular? Oh yeah, all the time. So why didn't you ever contact me about it before, like in the 2000s or 20s? It's like, trust me, you care about your son's team or your daughter's team. Yeah. Most people don't. And if I start talking about South or I start talking about Sheldon, the Churchill and the Thurston people. So it's like, and plus, more importantly, I'd have to follow it all. And trust me, I'm of the ilk where if I can't go, click, click, watch it, have live stats at the same time. I ain't doing that kind of research. And there's also the thing of having done a call-in show for more than two decades, I can count the times on one hand it's been requested. So it's in the one half of one eighth of one billionth of sort of a half of a percentage. So it's a no-go. It's a non-starter.
That said, with all of the success that Arizona State has had by jumping up from the same club level to a D1 program in NCAA hockey, and I think they're ranked like inside the top 10 or 15 in a couple national polls and like making it to Frozen Four
like,
tournaments.
Like, really? Like,
yeah, and they are, you know, supported
by
like
the I said, call me when that happens.
Right. And, you know, Oregon, they were doing similar things in the Pac-8 or 9 or whatever it was when ASU was a part of that. But it's really tough for, I think, club hockey in Eugene to kind of like get enough support to go to that next level. And I would really like a D1 hockey program because I think college hockey is very fun to watch.
I agree.
I watch the Frozen Four almost every year, and I'd like to be able to get to more games. And it's just, yeah, that there's something about the, not that I'm like diminishing it, but there's something about it just being the club sport as opposed to completely sanctioned and approved by the University of Oregon as a D1 sport is a big jump to make.
And of course, with Title IX, they can't just add it. There would have to be a fill in the blank. And I don't even know, gymnastics or something like that. I'm just trying to think where, like I was talking the other day, I was looking up Pac-12 softball and I was like, Oregon State doesn't have a softball team? I found that out last week. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you'd like to jump on in.
But still, congrats on the title, Oregon Hockey.
Oh, yeah, very cool. I mean, first of all, I saw a photo. The uniforms are a home run.
Oh, my God, they're so nice.
Damn, they were cool.
Oh, they're so nice.
So, you know, if you're going to get your priorities in order, yeah, I am way on board there, but I also kind of take some pride in not acting like I'm all in on something and I know about it when I just simply don't. All right, we are into the 4 o'clock hour. I wanted to throw out that starting Thursday, this is really fun. Tap and Growler announces their inaugural Bourbon Street Mardi Gras celebration Thursday through Sunday. And 4 days of Louisiana-style food specials, Bourbon Street cocktails, specialty drafts, live music, sausage and chicken, a mighty fine gumbo with house-made potato salad, shrimp po' boys, some French quarter, lots of drink specials, music. You get Dana McWayne Duo on Thursday to start it off. And again, if you pay attention, and I know a lot of you do, Colby and his people, Christine at Tap and Growler, 5th and Pearl, downtown Eugene, Beer Garden in the Wit on West 6th, and the newer Public House on A Street in Springfield. I mean, they are always coming up with different kinds of celebrations, and they have, you know, special nights where they'll feature a particular brewery, pairing parties with the food. They're always upgrading the food. They got live entertainment. They got trivia. So check them out. Tapandgrowler.com, beergardenme.com, publichousehub.com, and we appreciate all of their support. All right. I'm now done with my anger at James Dolan.
Are you?
No, I'm not. That's a total lie. You caught me. I appreciate you calling me out on that. So the problem is, and
Jerry,
we've seen it.
Just remember, it's not a lie if you believe it.
He's tried to have people thrown out who yell, sell the team. And I'd like to polygraph him and ask him, no, wait. Are you a really big basketball fan? Yeah, I love it. It's my favorite thing. If you were a diehard Knicks fan and spending, you know, if you went to 6-7 games a year, bought the tickets, if you had to commute, buy a couple cold ones, have dinner, you know, you're probably spending $1,500 a year. How would you feel about ownership? Would you love to see him have to ask that question? Well, I don't. You know what his first answer would be? First of all, just cue the music and the tap dancing would start. Well, I would have an appreciation for them trying to put it and be like, no, you're not putting a good quality product on the court. You're failing miserably.
But does he think he's failing? Because that's the thing. It's like, to him, as the president, owner, whatever his title is, he's not the is he the GM as well? Because if he's in charge of actually signing players and the coaches and everything, and like he's in charge of the on-court product, then yes, he's doing very bad, absolutely sell the team. But if his job is just president and owner, hey, make me money, I own the building or I'm a part owner in the building and I get money from the concerts that are here and we're living off of the nostalgia of one time in the 80s, this was the mecca of basketball and we're going to call it that for forever.
Until, even though it's not anymore.
Even though it's definitely not, and it's really like, other than just thinking about 30 years ago, we'll just keep thinking about that and we'll live on it forever. And even, you know, in the next decade, when it's 40 years ago when the mecca was great, we'll keep living off that too. He's like, that's his success, is just to make money, and that's what he's doing.
Well, apparently he does interject with both of his entities, which are the Rangers and the Knicks. And some people have a tendency to defend him because, you know, this decade under Torts, they went to the East Finals. Then they went to the Stanley Cup Final in 2014, I want to say, when they lost to the Kings. And then I think the next year, with Vigneault, their coach, they went back to the conference finals, losing in 7 to Tampa Bay when they were up 3-2, had both games at home and didn't score one goal. But at least, you know, he could live off that success. And Ranger fans, who have had one title since 1940, and that was 1994, are kind of thirsty for any kind of success. But now, even that franchise, which has had a nice run of success, like I said, two Final Fours and a Stanley Cup final over a four-year period, well, now they've become kind of the Knicks on ice. You know, they were sub-500 the last 2 years, and while they're over 500 this year, they're really not in the playoff picture. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in John. John, good afternoon. How's it going?
Not too bad, Steve. You were talking last hour about trying to come up with the lines for the song.
Yeah.
How does sign, stealer, deceiver sound?
Oh, that's a leader in the clubhouse. Signs, stealer, deceiver. All right. Because I threw this out on social media, John, so I'm expecting you guys to, in essence, do my work for me.
All right. Have a good one.
Good one. Yeah, and then we got to get the music. Yeah. Hey, if James Dolan could be an owner of an NBA team worth $4.6 million, I could sing. I can't be worse. The worst it could be is a tie.
Billion dollars, Steve.
What did I say, million?
You said million, yeah. You shorted him by about $100 million there.
Good luck with that. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. This is, I love stories like this. So, Target, actually, is there still a Target here? Was it Shopko or Target that went out of business? Okay, so Target, for those of us who think we shop at a fancy store. So, based out of Minneapolis, Target Field, where the Twinkies play. So, how about this one? They had to apologize to the Minnesota Golden Gophers. They had, for babies, a onesie with the, get ready for this, Minnesota Badgers. Not the Golden Gophers. That is incredible how, again, bad idea, dumb idea, stupid idea, wrong idea. Where's the second person who said, it's the Gophers, it's your state? that is.
I follow Paul Lucas at UniWatch on Twitter a whole lot, and he everybody from that follows him will like take pictures of weird things like that and send them in as like, hey, this is a weird uniform thing that happened. And for some reason, at the Target is the one place where college gear gets mixed up the most. And it's for
some reason
it's a lot of Big Ten schools I've noticed where like they just get flip flopped around with their rivals, and they're just Paul Lucas will, he'll retweet it and he'll be like, yep, I was at my local store and I saw this, this goods name was wrong, or this was spelled the wrong way, or something, or, you know, the rival is on here. But for it to happen to Minnesota in Minnesota with...
Woof!
Oh, man.
Seriously, I've worked in retail. You come up with a plan, you come up with an idea, it's got to get green lighted, sure. It's got to go to the buyers, it's got to go to the manufacturers. Nobody said, like, the Badgers are Wisconsin. We're the Golden Gophers. I mean, you could even hear their voice. Oh, we're the Gophers. Why do you come up with Badgers?
We don't need no stinking Badgers. I'm surprised you haven't said that yet.
That is painful, man. That is absolutely painful.
And it's not even like the Badgers was like taped on in a different font or whatever. It was like this was the go-to design was for this to say Minnesota Badgers.
I mean, it's a cool little onesie. It's just wrong. It is so wrong. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You could also drop us a text, 321-0824. What do you say? Take our first break of the 4 o'clock hour. And upon our return, we'll have an update, and we'll talk some Colorado basketball. Get ready for this big battle for first place Thursday night here at Matthew Knight Arena with Payton Nix, 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk, sponsored in part by Guarantee RV Supercenters, the first and only RV dealership to offer service 7 days a week. Big city selection and country savings. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
Largest lead for either team in this game has been 9. Lowry adds to the points total and adds to the shooting percentage. The 15-game win streak is the longest by any Canadian-based franchise ever.
Ever. Forever. As we welcome you back to Sports Talk 95.3 The Score. How about my Raptors, who was one of my light-em-up choices yesterday? Toronto rolls again. That's 15 in a row. They were talking about that as the most wins in a row for a Canadian-based NBA team. Well, considering the other one were the Vancouver Grizzlies, who I don't know during their time as an NBA franchise based in Vancouver that they won 15 total games. All right, that might be a tad extreme, but I don't remember if the Grizz ever even met, when they were in Vancouver, they never even qualified for the playoffs in their 6 years there. But anyway, let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Talk about this big Colorado-Oregon game. They've won 5 of 6. They are the outright Pac-12 leader. They jumped 8 spots in the national rankings. Our guest covers the team for BuffZone.com, the Daily Camera out of Boulder. You can follow him on Twitter. Use the handle at PRooney07. Pat Rooney joins us. Pat, much appreciate the time. How's life treating you?
Good, you bet. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So one of the things I enjoy about this is you kind of get the fan pulse, especially in a great college town. And prior to the arrival of Tad Boyle as coach, you know, the Buffs had been to the NCAA tournament twice since 1969. He took them 4 times in 5 years. I think most fans would say, well, I know Chauncey Billups. But, Pat, accurate to say that the Buff fans have an appreciation for what Coach Boyle has done in many ways, kind of putting that program on the college hoop map?
I think so. You know, it's interesting. We have a lot of debates out here, and I hear from a lot of fans, you know, there's still a segment of fans that are just frustrated that those 4 NCAA tournaments ended with only one first-round win out of all of them. I kind of take the big picture view that you kind of alluded to. This program has done more under Tad Boyle than it has in the entire history of its program. And to have this team now, you know, it's been a fun group to watch. What's been interesting about this group is, and you don't see it too often in college basketball, where you have kind of a core group that, that really grows up together. McKinley Wright, Deshaun Schwartz, Tyler Bay, Evan Batty all came in together. They've been together 3 years now. Batty did redshirt the first year, so he's a year behind in eligibility. But they all came in together, and they've steadily improved together. Lucas Seward is a senior that's played with those, you know, that group as well for 3 years. Obviously on track to get back to the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2016.
I got to mention the Stanford game Saturday when the Cardinal big man Oscar De Silva and the Buffs, Evan Batty, they went to the ground. I was watching the game and it was like, whoa. De Silva whacked his head hard on the floor. It brought Batty to tears, and obviously it sent a shockwave through, and he's okay, but The one thing about it is you can kind of take solace. I mean, both teams kind of instantly united, and it really showed the best in sportsmanship, didn't it?
I agree, and both coaches talked about that afterward. And being in the arena, I mean, it was a little bit, you know, kind of giving you a goosebumps kind of moment. And, you know, I've been doing this for 20-something years now and seen a lot of amazing things, but I've never seen anything quite like that. You know, sometimes you see similar things maybe in football when there's a really bad injury and the teams come together, but never quite seen that in basketball before, with both teams kind of getting together in a little huddle, kind of, you know, pumping each other back up to get back out there and compete again after what was a kind of a frightening situation under the basket with Oscar De Silva. And, you know, both coaches talked about that. It's bigger than basketball. And it was really cool to see. You know, Jared Haas from Stanford had some interesting comments about, you know, we've seen kind of a lot of the ugliness in college basketball the last couple of years with some of the things that have been happening off the court.
Yep.
Which obviously has touched the Pac-12 a little bit as well. And this was a reminder of what's good about sports and the way it can bring people together. And it certainly was a special moment last Saturday in Boulder.
I want to talk about McKinley Wright, who Oregon fans are well aware kind of ruined them their one meeting this year. Just a tremendous all-around game. And he was key in that rally on Saturday. I mean, he was Mr. Basketball in Minnesota. Then as a freshman right away, honorable mention All-League, All Pac-12 last year. Accurate to say he might be on his way to being viewed as an all-time great Buff hooper.
Oh, absolutely. This year he became, and I know Peyton Pritchard has similar numbers, but a little bit higher. I don't have those in front of me. But McKinley this year, he passed 400 assists, and he passed 400 rebounds, and he passed the 1,000-point mark. Only one other player, Donnie Boyce from the early 1990s. Only one other player in Buff's history has kind of hit those three plateaus in their career. And I know Peyton Pritchard has a similar but high stat line with points, rebounds, and assists. And if McKinley Wright comes back next year, he'll kind of hit those as well. Just a great all-around player. Tad Boyle has said it many times. From the moment McKinley Wright got here, he's pretty much had the keys to the offense. And right now, he's really playing great. You know, arguably some of the best basketball of his time at CU. Compared to early in the year, his turnover rate is down. He's picking his spots from three-point range. You know, he went 3-for-4, not known as a three-point shooter necessarily, but always has a knack, it seems like, for hitting a big one late in games. He hit 3 out of 4 against Stanford. And, you know, on the floor, he's just kind of the consummate floor general. I know Oregon fans are kind of well aware and have their own in Peyton Pritchard, but McKinley Wright has been that guy for two seasons and counting now for the Buffs.
Talking Colorado basketball with Pat Rooney of the Buff Zone, Daily Camera. You know, this team really has no freshmen in the regular rotation, three sophomores, and those guys all played as freshmen, and you kind of alluded to it earlier. When you see how good they've been in the second half of games, I mean, they've really only been out of two games, at Kansas and Arizona. That experience, really, I look at it as has been a real key trigger to so many of those strong finishes.
Oh, I agree. They don't get overwhelmed by the moment. They've kind of been through the battles. If they're behind, they don't panic. You know, they got off to a bad start, even then they wound up having a big win against Dayton in Chicago right before Christmas. You know, they got behind early in that one, but didn't flinch. You know, stayed calm. You know, started pecking away, got their defense going, got some stops, and eventually came back and won an overtime thriller at the buzzer. So this team doesn't get overwhelmed by the moment. They're not going to be overwhelmed if they get behind. You know, they may not always play their best, but they play really well together. You know, besides just the experience you talked about, they really enjoy playing with one another. You know, it's a team that feeds off one another. They genuinely enjoy it when one of the other guys gets hot and they can kind of ride that hot hand throughout a game. So it's not just the experience, but the balance as well that it's kind of made them kind of shake off some bad starts to games and be able to rally in the second half.
You know, Pat, one of your pieces this week on BuffZone.com, you mentioned Colorado kind of revisiting an early season theme. I mean, they won 23 games last year, and there were big dance expectations, no question about it. And now that they've answered the call and positioned themselves so well, what are the coaches and players saying about now more than ever, as you wrote, blocking out that noise?
Yeah, it's been a recurring theme throughout the season. Certainly, the beginning of the year, like I noted in that piece, kind of coming into the year, obviously with the great finish they had last year, and everyone coming back basically, that there was going to be a lot of expectations. But you know, now that we're hitting the stretch run, 4 weeks left in the regular season, they've climbed all the way up. You know, jumped 8 spots to number 16. For the time being, they're all alone at the top of the Pac-12. If that noise is going to kind of come back now, but this team has done a great job of internally kind of taking things one game at a time. You know, heck, Oregon State knocked them off a couple days after they beat the Ducks here in Boulder. Oregon State really stunned them over the last 7 minutes. So I know that's a big game for this team on Saturday in Corvallis. They feel like they owe those guys one as well. But this team has done a great job all season of kind of taking it one game at a time, focusing on the task at hand. Kind of laying it all out on the line and no worry about the Beavers when the time comes.
Couple final thoughts talking Colorado hoops with Pat Rooney. One last player. I mean, Tyler Bay came out of L.A., and it was a nice score for Coach Boyle. He was a 4-star, and I think right off you could see he was an A-plus defender, and now he's off an All-Pac-12 season. He's not really a big guy, 6'7", 215, but he's tenacious, and, you know, he rebounds, he guards. How much of a heart and soul player has he been for that program?
You know, he's, I was describing him as wiry. You know, he's got long arms. He's got fantastic leaping ability. He's not the biggest guy, like you noted. He's not, I would say a traditional post. He's active around the glass. He can knock down an open shot. You know, I think his mid-range game is a little bit underrated. And boy, I'll tell you, even his three-point shooter, he's not known as a three-point shooter, and certainly that's not where his forte is, but you know, he went 0-for-4 in the season opener, and since then he's 11-for-20. he picks his spots, and he always seems to make it when he's given the opportunity. So defensively, what he's been is very disruptive, and I think that's what gets him going the most. With those long arms, we talk about the athleticism. Not only can he block shots, but he disrupts passing lanes. He's already hit a career high for assists, so he's become a much better passer. He's already surpassed his career high in steals. We're seeing him kind of just getting his, tipping passes away, getting his hands on loose balls a lot more. And that's really what gets this team going. He's a glue guy. You know, he's not the emotional leader. I would say Evan Batty is that. He's not the floor general the way McKinley Wright is. But when Tyler Bay gets hot, that's obviously just a real disruptive statement, and it really takes this team to another level when he's rolling.
Yeah, I would say the opponent views him as a menace.
Yeah, that's probably a good way to put it.
Lastly, I kind of like to step outside of our Eugene coverage bubble. I mean, we know when the Ducks come to Boulder, history says they always lose. And as you wrote, these teams are heading a little bit in different directions. So from your observations or what you're hearing the guys saying, what kind of challenges do they expect from this Oregon team arriving home and really needing a win?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think we can throw Oregon's recent, you know, a couple games struggle kind of out the window. Obviously, this is a huge game for both teams. Oregon's undefeated at home. I expect the Buffs will get their best shots on Thursday nights. And, you know, it's a lot of like what we saw in Boulder. The Buffs are going to have to handle that press. You know, McKinley Wright, I'm guessing, is going to have to play big minutes. You know, he does anyway, but they don't really have a true point guard besides him. Daylon Kuntz does a pretty good job. He's more of a natural two guard, but he's kind of asked to fill that role for the brief minutes that McKinley is on the bench. You know, and I think for the Buffs, it's a matter of having a low turnover game. You know, that was a struggle for this team early in the non-conference slate. Anyway. This team had a lot more turnovers than you would have guessed for a squad with a veteran point guard. But really right around the Dayton time and certainly around the Oregon game, they started cutting that down. That first Oregon game is still a season-low turnover total. And the Buffs are going to have to do that again against the Ducks. You know, they've only had 10 turnovers in each of the last three games. That rate has really come down since non-conference play. And, you know, I think when it gets down to it, the Buffs shoot the ball pretty well. They're executing pretty well on offense. If they have another low turnover game, I think that's going to be key for them for staying in this game down into crunch time.
Folks, he's Pat Rooney on Twitter at PRooney07. He's covering the Buffs for BuffZone.com, the Daily Camera out of Boulder. And Pat, really appreciate you joining us, finding some time to offer some great time and insight. Thanks so much. Really means a lot.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. Anytime.
All right. Have a good one, Pat. All right. Good stuff there. Obviously wired into the program. Boulder, all of that. Terrific stuff. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the 4 o'clock hour of Sports Talk next. 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk. Coors Light is the official sponsor of your Oregon Ducks and the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953 for your chance to get involved. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Not coaching effort or energy. She's not coaching her culture. She's coaching basketball players, and they can play. Harris on the out of bounds play, 15 for Ty, and they are up 20 on the Huskies. And it averages making 5 triples a game. This is just too easy.
The number one Gamecocks thump UConn in Columbia, 70-52. Dawn Staley's USC team is seriously legit. Ty Harris, like I mentioned earlier, 19 points, 11 assists, 4 rebounds, played all 40 minutes, did not commit one turnover. So you can't offer up an assist-to-turnover ratio because it's
infinite.
It's infinite. You know, if she did want to be a, I mean, let me tell you something, 3-1 is like great. I mean, she was at 11-1. But anyway. What a performance. UConn suffering a 15-plus point loss for the third time this season, for the first time in 27 years. But the teams they've lost to are the three best teams in the country, kind of like consensus. Number one, South Carolina. Number two, Baylor. Number three, Oregon. So you got that going for you, which is nice. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline.
Tannenism.
If you'd like to dive on in, actually, you could kind of mosey on in. Hit us up via the text line, 321-0824. On Twitter at 953thescore for the station, for the show, at Sports Talk 953. For Nick, it's at Rick Nodgers. I'll tell you one thing. I've had a few people chime in about this baseball proposal of playoff expansion, and 14 of the 30 teams would get in, and depending on where you are in the standings, getting to choose your first round opponent. And a lot of people say it's white noise to distract from the Astros cheating scandal. I don't think anything is going to distract from that. I mean, you've got 28, 27 teams who are like, you guys cheated. We hate you. And I'll tell you what, though, after listening to sports radio all day and ingesting multiple takes, I will say this. It got people talking, which is important. And I've said this before. When I talk with friends of mine and even my dad and his friends, you know, they tell, well, I'd like to. I'm just like, I hate to say this. They don't care what I think. They triply don't care what you think. You're 80-somethings. You've been watching the game since the Mantle era. You have me. We have you. I'm not a target audience or a potential growth area. They need to worry about, is it even possible that this would get some of the younger demos, you know, the fence sitters, more prone to watch or go to a game?
I'm trying to think if Major League Baseball did actually go through with this in 2022, 2023,
yeah,
whatever
2022.
It was. If they went through with it for like, and they gave it, okay, let's try it for 3 years, let's see how it goes, and if it's a disaster, we'll go back to the system that we have. But I'm trying, like, leagues, all of the professional leagues haven't had a rollback in rule changes. Like, they kind of leak out a couple things, and maybe the finalized version of this isn't necessarily what was leaked out now, but it's not like they don't really have test runs for these kinds of things. Like, it's just kind of like, okay, we're going to implement a rule. If people do or do not like it, that doesn't matter because we've made the decision, we're going to roll forward. Like the NFL with their overtime, they're not ever going to go back to just simple sudden death.
I know.
They'll try and improve on where they are from now and make changes to that to the point where it gets so overly the top confusing, even more confusing than it is now. Leagues don't go back on the rule changes that they put out there. Like, it's really hard for them to say, we made a mistake.
I did not hear, I read a little bit about Trevor Bauer, who was not thrilled about this whole concept. And he kind of went off. And I'll tell you what, there were a lot of people who said, well, I understand your passion. He did an installment of something called Nothing Personal, I think it was. Bauer tweeted, your proposal at Rob Manfred, his commissioner, it's absurd for too many reasons. You're a joke. You have no clue about baseball. And, you know, Manfred's not going to respond to that, but you would imagine there might be a phone call calling out the commissioner on social media. I don't know how well that works. And the new The bottom line, this Samson guy brought up, which I thought was kind of spot on, is, well, something's probably going to be implemented. Right. There will be an expanded playoffs. It will enable the league to get more money in its next broadcast deal. And we've said that before. You can circle around. You can get clearance from the flight deck and go zoom, zoom, zoom. It's going to come down to money.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing is a lot of the people I've seen like hating on this are like, oh, the wild card game is a perfect one game playoff. It's like a game seven. It's just baseball cocaine. You can't miss it. You got to watch it. And then, all of a sudden you've got four teams that are left and you're right there at the very end and every pitch means so much. It's like that probably won't change once you get two. If there's, you know, two more teams involved in the playoffs, that intensity isn't going to go away. Like, playoff baseball is intense. The point is to get more teams involved into the chance to make the playoffs, because too many teams just end up sitting on the fence and idling and like, we don't really want to commit to, you know, selling our prospects to get a rental guy. And we kind of do this. We think we're good enough, but we're kind of not. more teams getting into the playoffs means that later on in the season, more games are going to mean something.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to just, you got two teams that are 12 games out of the one team that they're chasing, as opposed to these two teams are fighting each other for a playoff spot. That's going to get more people involved.
And it's going to make July 31st more fun, the right. trade deadline. And, you know, expanding the rosters and the post deadline where you got to clear waivers. I mean, you're going to have more teams thinking, well, like somebody brought up the Mets last year. There was a point where it was like, oh, come on, the Mets. And all of a sudden, the end of the year, it was like, well, they're healthy and they've got that pitching. You really want to face Syndergaard and DeGrom?
Right.
And those guys in a do or die cutthroat 2 out of 3 series?
Yeah. And then maybe the thing that is too far is that one team gets a bye and the next team gets to pick their opponent. That's the part that, like, wow, the drama of that and, like, who makes those decisions, that would be fantastic television. That's obscene. Like, I know a lot.
I can't imagine.
I know a lot of teams are trying to figure out, like, what to do with their playoffs, to do little tweaks here and there so that the finals and or whatever it is feel like a final and these are the two best actual teams. Letting a team pick their opponent,
it seems nuts.
That seems the part that's a little over the top.
I'll tell you the truth, though. When I first heard it, I was like, okay, I'm not. It's one of those deals where as you go through like a whole political process, you may vote no in the end, but tell me more. Tell me more about this.
I'm listening.
Plus, more importantly, they started talking MLB today, and I didn't have to hear about some cut-rate football league for the desperate.
XFL! XFL.
What he said.
I still brought it up in What Are You Doing? You kind of let that slide.
Yeah, I did. It's okay. I'm already in ignore mode. All right. Looking ahead to the 5 o'clock hour, we'll talk with Kelly Graves, talk some Duck Hoops. All coming at you next, 95.3 The Score.
Just a bit outside.